Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, April 9th, 2022, weekend edition. Rig count increases by 16 to nearly 700 by Mella McEwen. Despite constraints ranging from labor shortages to equipment shortages, U.S. drillers managed to put a significant number of drilling rigs back to work during the first week of April. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes, which has issued the weekly rig count since the 1940s, said Friday the U.S. rig count jumped 16 rigs to 689, the third weekly increase and the highest count since March 2020. There were 546 rigs for drilling for crude and 209 more than the 3,700 seen last year. There were 141 rigs seeking natural gas, up 3 for the week and 48 more than the 93 counted last year. Texas added 11 rigs for 342 at work within the state. New Mexico was unchanged at 96. The Permian Basin rig count jumped by 9, the largest rise since April 2020. To 332, 108 more than the 224 counted the previous year. County is second in purchasing power, by Stuart Green. Bolstered by a per capita income of more than $126,000, Midland County ranked second in the state when it came to places with the most purchasing power, according to Smart Asset. The financial information website showed Midland County ranked first by nearly $35,000 per capita income over Sherman County in the Panhandle. Midland County's average of $126,631 also was 10th nationally, the only other Permian Basin county to rank in the top 10 in Texas for per capita income was Glasscock County at $87,334. That per capita income put Midland behind Sherman on the overall purchasing power index, which factors in cost of living and per capita income. Midland County's index score was 68.5, which was second to Sherman's 70.34. Midland's cost of living was negative in the index report. They showed a baseline cost of living metric of $54,426, which was nearly $20,000 more than the state average and ranked 253 of 254 counties across the state. To give another example of the separation between Midland County and the rest of the state, the next highest cost of living of the counties inside the top 10 of the index was King County with $40,791. Smart Asset showed Midland ranked 35th among Texas counties. The website showed Midland's best ranking previously was 12th in 2015. Ector County finished 116th. Smart Asset reported that it calculated the purchasing power in each county by determining the weighted cost of living as a percentage of per capita income. Teenager arrested after dragging MPD officer. A Midland teenager has been arrested after dragging a Midland Police Department officer with his vehicle. Philip Aiden Bates, 17, has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony charge. Bond has not been set. MPD officers were dispatched Thursday at about 9 o'clock p.m. to the 4500 block of Brookdale Drive in reference to a person sitting in a car in the north alleyway of Brookdale. An officer attempted to make contact with the driver, later identified as Bates, but the driver fled in his 2006 black Ford Fusion. While trying to stop Bates from fleeing, the MPD officer became attached to the Bates car and was unable to disengage. Bates continued to travel northbound onto Midland Drive, dragging the officer. The attached officer fired shots before Bates stopped his car and was taken into custody. The officer was not injured. The shooting is being investigated by Texas Rangers. The investigation is ongoing. A Midland County jury determined that Don Del Real Herrera will serve a sentence of life in prison for the murder in 2018. The Midland County District Attorney's Office reported Friday that he pleaded guilty Monday to the murder of Francis Ibarra Sanchez by cutting and stabbing on April 14, 2018. Herrera contended that he committed the murder under the immediate influence of sudden passion from an adequate cause. The jury heard the evidence this week and determined that Herrera did not prove he had committed under the influence of sudden passion and assessed the defendant's punishment at confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for life. The state was represented by Midland County District Attorney Laura Nordoff and Assistant District Attorney Carol Rex. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale Music Director and Conductor Gary Lewis helped Legacy High School Orchestra students Friday tune up for their upcoming spring concert. MOSC held the clinic as part of its continued educational outreach effort. Lewis worked with symphony and chamber ensembles on pieces from Beethoven and Shostakovich. MOSC is one of the largest professional performing arts organizations in West Texas. Its mission is to enrich the lives of West Texans through professional music performances and music education programs. The concert is scheduled for 6:45 p.m. May 12th at LHS Auditorium. For more information, visit MOSC.org and MidlandISD.net. Christine Davis Smith passed away on March 23rd. Graveside funeral service will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Cemetery in Midland on Thursday, April 14th at 1 p.m. Betty Ann Thornsburg passed away on March 30th. A celebration of her life was held at the Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity on Monday, April the 4th. Christopher Ryan Bledsoe passed away on April 2nd. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 13th at Natalie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Roxanne Rangel Galarza passed away on April 4th. Visitation, testimonies, and live music will be held at Natalie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home Saturday, April 9th at from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. and again on Sunday, April 10th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday prayer service, a celebration of her life, will begin at 11 a.m. on Monday, April 11th at Stonegate Fellowship, with graveside following at Rest Haven Cemetery at 1. Tonya Michelle Coker passed away on March 17th. Donald Royce Cleghorn passed away on April 5th. A family memorial and celebration of life is pending and will be held at a later date. Patricia Decker of Gardendale passed away on April 7th. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 14th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Russell Lamar Byram passed away on April 6th. Private family graveside will be held in Monahans. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, April 9th. Odessan convicted of sexual assault. Man sentenced to 24 years in prison. A 49-year-old Odessa man was sentenced to 24 years in prison Friday after being convicted of sexually assaulting the 10-year-old daughter of a woman he'd been dating for 5 years. It took a 244th Ector County District Court jury just over 2 hours to convict Jesse Felipe Espinosa on 3 out of the 4 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child he was facing. The jury took another 30 minutes to sentence Espinosa to 12 years per count, and Judge James Rush opted to run 2 of the sentences concurrently and the 3rd sentence consecutively. Espinosa had been facing 5 to 99 years or a life sentence on each of the 3 counts, and it was up to Rush as to whether the terms would be served concurrently or consecutively. Assistant Ector County District Attorneys Elizabeth Howard and Kevin Schultz reminded jurors during closing arguments Friday morning that DNA tests and physical exams corroborated everything the child told a forensic examiner and nurse following the assault, which was alleged to have occurred on April 13, 2020. The evidence showed the girl suffered injuries, and Espinosa's DNA was found on the girl's lips, breast, and stomach, the prosecutors told jurors. In addition, a mixture of Espinosa's DNA and the girl's DNA was found inside her panties. Defense attorney Michael McLeish reminded jurors prosecutors did not present any evidence that DNA was found inside the girl's vagina or anus. He suggested there are other ways to explain Espinosa's DNA on the other areas of the girl's body. DNA can be transferred during the washing of clothes, for example. The defense attorney also reminded jurors medical and law enforcement personnel did not find any semen or blood on the girl, her clothing, or bedding. Ultimately, the jury acquitted Espinosa on the count alleging that he sodomized the girl. 19 people were hung following the Salem witch trials because of false accusations and despite a lack of evidence, McLeish said. While some are inclined to believe all men are evil creatures who will do anything for sex, McLeish said, is it possible other evil was done in this case? Espinosa's toothbrush could have been used to deposit his DNA onto the girl, he said. You really need to look at this, ladies and gentlemen. No blood, no semen, no DNA, he said. Howard explained away the lack of blood by reminding jurors there was no testimony indicating the sexual assaults were violent or aggressive. What possible motive could the girl and her mother have for making up such a story? Howard asked. They had nothing to gain financially from the defendant. The prosecutor also suggested other DNA would have been found on the girl's panties if it had been deposited by the washing machine. The girl also lived with two siblings and her mother. The real motive to lies lies within the defendant, Howard said. Prior to closing arguments, McLeish had asked Rush for a mistrial in the case due to a pipe bomb being found outside the Ector County Courthouse, causing a one-day delay in the trial. The defense attorney said he was convinced jurors might assume his clients planted the pipe bomb to cause a delay and there was nothing he'd be able to do to lift this cloud of suspicion over his client. He noted that the police also questioned his client, telling him he was a potential suspect. Howard argued against the motion, noting Espinosa was not taken into custody following the questioning and was in fact sitting there in the courtroom. Rush denied the motion, saying jurors had been told all along they must render their verdict solely based on evidence they hear in the courtroom. He also denied a defense motion to individually question the jurors as to whether they were afraid to attend court. The judge pointed out none of the jurors had come forward to discuss any qualms. This is Jane reading for the Saturday Odessa American. April 9th. More oil and gas pipelines needed. Midstream executive says several projects in development stage. Mostly out of sight, but not out of mind, you might think Texas's 417,000 miles of intrastate oil and gas pipelines would be more than sufficient for the foreseeable future. Not so, say representatives of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, Pinnacle Midstream Incorporated, the American Petroleum Institute, and the Texas Pipeline Association. TIPRO President Ed Longenecker said Tuesday from Austin that natural gas pipeline capacity from the Permian Basin has risen significantly in recent years by 6 billion cubic feet per day. Kinder Morgan also owns the Permian Highway, sending gas from the Waha Header near Cayonosa, 64 miles southwest of Odessa, to Katy, west of Houston, the Gulf Coast, and Mexico. The Whistler Main Line is a 42-inch wide, 450-mile-long joint venture of the Whitewater, MPLX, WTG, and Stone Peak Company that runs from the Waha to the South Texas town of Agua Dulce. Thanks to this push, we have adequate capacity for today, Longenecker said. However, we may not have adequate capacity for tomorrow. As the world tries to step away from Russian oil and gas, the U.S. will need to increase both domestic oil and gas production and our liquefied natural gas exports significantly, and the Permian Basin will be key to making that happen. Noting that Texas already produces a quarter of all the natural gas in the nation, Longenecker said, if we are able to keep up, we will need more pipelines. Increased pipeline capacity would help the basin continue to reduce its methane emissions intensity by quickly moving natural gas away from production areas to alleviate buildup and reduce the need for flaring. Between 2011 and 2020, methane emissions intensity fell by almost 70% in the basin. Since 2011, total oil and gas production there has increased by over 320%. Representing that part of the industry that moves oil and gas from the upstream fields here to the downstream plants and refineries on the Gulf Coast, Pinnacle Midstream Partner Chief Commercial Officer Drew Ward said from Houston that he knew of several current construction initiatives. I agree that additional pipelines need to be built out of the basin, Ward said. I know of three or four projects that are being shopped in the midstream and downstream to try and take care of the problem. It's just a matter of time till one of those gets announced, and I'm rooting for whichever one gets a final investment decision. Handling solely natural gas, he said, Pinnacle collects, compresses, and sells its product at the Waha, where a lot of lines connect with one another. Pinnacle owns 60 miles of thick-walled 6 to 16-inch high-pressure lines running from its processing plant southeast of Midland. Ward said the projects being developed would be finished in late 2023 or early 2024 if construction started today, contingent on right-of-way acquisitions. Asked how much they'd cost, he said hundreds of millions, if not billions. I've been bullish on our industry my whole life, he said. We've been under attack for the past 2 or 3 years, and it's unfair because people have underestimated the need. The attacks have left us short on manpower and investment. But we are a necessary industry, and I think those of us who have stayed with it and kept our heads down will be rewarded because the world does not move without energy. Frank Macchiarello, Senior Vice President for Policy, Economics, and Regulatory Affairs at the American Petroleum Institute in Washington, said more lines are needed to keep pace with the demand and resources that we have right here at home, with the nation needing 21 million barrels of oil per day. Coming out of COVID, the demand picked up relatively quickly, and the supply slowly responded. Macchiarello said, the high prices have been exacerbated by supply chain and labor market constraints, and they have been compounded by unrest from the invasion of Ukraine and from Russia creating volatility in the market. As a country, the U.S. has been behind the curve on building out infrastructure. Macchiarello said the hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling out of the shale revolution brought an abundant supply of oil and natural gas to the American people. It strengthened our energy security, and the U.S. went from being a net importer of energy to a net exporter, moving refined oil and liquefied natural gas on ships. It also shined the light on the need for more infrastructure. One of our priorities as an industry is to provide a reasonable system of pipelines to deliver energy, and we need regulatory certainty to be able to do that. We need certainty around the ability to site and construct these major projects from the basin to the midstream and the Gulf Coast. Macchiarello said shale resolution of the past decade has boomed in the Permian Basin's daily oil production from about 750,000 barrels per day to the 5.1 million BPD recorded in March. We need more pipelines, he said. There's no reason to question it. At the end of 2021, we surpassed Australia and Qatar to become the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas in the world, with most of it coming from Texas and Louisiana. Over time, Europe will need more LNG, and we need to make sure they have the capacity to receive it. Macchiarello said the buzz among industry insiders in Washington is that government leaders have taken their eye off the ball on energy security, and this is hopefully a wake-up call to strengthen it. He said other big challenges are to solve the supply chain crisis, get more steel from Asia and other sources, and address the labor market with many workers having left during the pandemic. Texas Pipeline Association President Thura Cannon said Wednesday from Austin that pipelines are the safest, most reliable, efficient, and economic means of transporting large quantities of natural gas, crude, and refined petroleum products. In addition to safely delivering oil and gas without incident 99.9% of the time due to rigid pipeline integrity inspection programs, an adequate pipeline infrastructure helps lessen pollution by reducing the need for routine flaring, Cannon said. In addition, pipelines take more trucks off the road. A moderate 20-inch line running 50 miles through a country can displace over 1,600 trucks, lessening congestion, pollution, traffic accidents, and highway damage. Now more than ever, it's essential that America have the needed pipeline infrastructure to provide consumers with dependable, low-cost sources of energy and industry with raw materials used in the production of a myriad of common household and healthcare products. This is Jane reading for the Saturday, April 9th, Odessa American, from the Death Notice section. In Austin, Paula Holloway passed away on April 2nd. Due to complications from lung and heart issues. She was 81 years old. Paula is survived by her husband, Neil Holloway, her two daughters, Lisa Sledge, Lori White, and her son, Bryant Holloway, and many grandchildren. Services for Paula will be held at Alvord Baptist Church in Alvord, Texas, on April 16th at 3 p.m. In Odessa, Nicomedes Palomino, also known as Nick, 54, died on Thursday, April 7th in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 9th at Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Burial will follow at a later date. Father Joseph Euchre is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. In Odessa, Marcy G. Barnes, 71, died on Thursday, April 7th, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by La Paz Purchase Funeral Home of Odessa. In Midland, Joel Rodriguez, 56, died on April 7th. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, April 10th, 2022. Floating Teachers Make the Best of Things, by Ruth Campbell. Between Odessa and Permian High Schools, there are 38 teachers without a classroom, also called floaters. Victoria Smith, who teaches English and coaches volleyball at OHS, and Sarah Garlington, a dollar and cents teacher at Permian, are two of them. Both schools have about 4,000 students each. Proponents of a May bond election say passing the two parts of the bond will ease overcrowding at the high schools. Ector County ISD has called a $398,255,000 bond issue for May 7th. Proposition A for $215,255,000 would include maintenance and life cycle repairs, replacement for school district buildings. $130,255,000. $255,000. Construction of a new career and technical education, CTE Center, $70 million. Classroom technology upgrades, $15 million. Proposition B, for $183 million, includes a new comprehensive high school with a capacity for 2,500 to 2,800 students at UConn and Faudry Road. Smith has been with Ector County ISD for 7 years, and Garlington, a career and technical education teacher, is in her fourth year. When she signed on, Smith had no idea she wouldn't have a classroom after 7 years, but the reality is she floats. Smith teaches 4 different classes in 3 different locations. She said having a classroom would be awesome. It would be amazing, she said. Smith has rooms assigned to her based on when teachers have their conferences or lunch periods. She has 4 places that are assigned to her. For example, this year I have an English 2 teacher, Mr. Mullins. He has lunch and conference back-to-back, so I get to teach my 4th and 5th period in the same room, while While he's gone, I get to go in there, Smith said. Over the years, she's come up with a way to make her life a little smoother, like having things on a strap so she can carry her gear or easier. A couple years, I had a whiteboard attached to my cart, like Velcro, to carts, so I roll it in. There's the do now. There's the objective. There's everything because I don't have to go in somebody's classroom and erase their stuff, write out my stuff. You have to be ready, right then and there, Smith said. Between the back seat of her car and her cart, it's Smith's classroom. She keeps assignments, folders, composition books for her students, and other items on the cart. I try to be as minimal as possible. With having Chromebooks, that has helped. Not having so much paper. I think I'm kind of like an expert, finding ways to make my life easier and still be available for my kids as quickly as I possibly can, Smith said. She added that she has 5 minutes between classes. I'm walking in with my kids, which is not typical for somebody who has a classroom. I have to wait for the teacher before me to get finished wrapping up their things. Their kids get out, and then me and my kids go in together. So that's another thing that is different for me. I don't have everything on the board as the students are entering. They know, okay, we're going to have to wait just a second. Wait for Coach Smith to get everything going, Smith said. I have a system that makes it like maybe 1-2 minutes of extra time that I need. A couple of months ago, we got what they called docking stations, which have been great. So now I have everything already open on my laptop, everything that I need for the day. So when I go into my room, I will attach it to the docking station, and I can immediately put it on the board instead of having to log into the computer, get everything open that I need, which takes another 5 minutes. So the docking stations have been a serious help, she added. Not having a classroom is the norm for Smith, and she doesn't complain about it. It's not anything that I can't handle, she said. She added that sometimes students help her and the other teachers are accommodating. Despite the struggles, Miss said it hasn't turned her away from teaching. I think this is what I love to do. So my outlook is you've got to do what you've got to do. You have to serve the kids that you have. If that means you're going to 3 different classrooms, then you're going through different classrooms. The teachers that you float into their rooms, I've never had a teacher who was not accommodating, Smith added. So no, I don't think it deters me from teaching. It's just another obstacle that you've got to get through. I mean, that's what teaching is, making things work. Garlington is in her 4th year of teaching at Permian. Her course is Dollars and Cents, a financial education class that uses Dave Ramsey's curriculum. She earned her bachelor's degree in family and consumer science education from Texas Tech. She has new students every semester because her class lasts just 1 semester. In her 4th year teaching, she is working part-time this year and does not have a fixed classroom, but she's had a classroom before. My 1st year, I was in 1 classroom, and then last year, I believe, which was COVID years, so they were a little bit different. But I think I was in 2 different classrooms for those as well, Garlington said. Now she works off her cart. I have everything I need. I just wheel it from the room to the next, Garlington said. She added that she loves what she teaches. It's an elective. I think it's so valuable and such a great tool that students really need when they graduate, Garland said. Not having a good classroom is hard. As with Smith, students sometimes get confused about where to find Garland. I have tutorials in the morning in this classroom, and so that's my only period. I have to be sure and tell them to go to the other classroom, not the classroom we're in right now, just because I can't be in 2 places at 1 in the morning. So I will always have them in here because this is where I start out the morning. So yes, there has been some confusion on that, Garland says. Holt Harrington, who teaches business information management, is a CTE instructor. He has been at Permian High School for 4 years. I don't really have a problem with floating because I have such a good floater coming in my room. But I know it's hard on them because they don't have all their supplies and equipment. They have their own little rolling cart, and some of them could go from here to there and down the stairs and have to float down to another room. So I know it's a lot of trouble for them, Harrington said. He added that when he has his conference and lunch periods, he can work in his room, but the floating cannot. He said he thinks it would be good if ECISD had another high school. The high school is just overflowed with students, the parking lot, the hallways. I feel like it's almost impossible to make it to the classroom in 5 minutes because the hallways are so packed, Harrington said. Owner touts consistency, loyal customers, by Eli Hartman. As city leaders and newbies work to attract Odessa to downtown, one restaurant owner already has the secret formula to running a successful downtown sample for 44 years. Like the sign says, we're downtown when downtown wasn't cool. The Permian Basin Hamburger Company owner, Dwayne Cox, pegs their success on consistency and a loyal, repetitive customer base. Good food, good customers, good repeat customers. We have a really good repeat business, he said, adding, but I think it's just because it's consistent, you know. Just exactly like they remember it, because they were in there last year or 10 years ago. We don't change. Over the years, Cox has seen the landscape of downtown change. Cox's advice to those seeking to make a go of downtown, be careful, find something that's unique that will bring others to downtown. I advise them to be very careful, he said, before letting out a big laugh. Pick something that's unique that would work people to come downtown, because they're not going to come down unless you've got something to attract them. Cox originally opened the restaurant in 1978 with his wife, Jeanette, who died in 2015, before quickly realizing that it takes more than just a small crew to run a small business. The restaurant's popularity quickly grew, with lining up outside around the corner. Cox believes it has everything to do with consistency. Cox gestures behind the counter and said, I do everything over there. I did the first day I opened. If you like it the first day we were open, you're going to like it today. Cox isn't the only one who believes the Permian Basin Hamburger Company is consistent. Husband and wife, Zane and Courtney Digby, are both longtime customers and have been visiting the downtown staple for nearly 20 years, ever since they were kids. I came here when I was little, Zane Digby said. His wife agreed, saying they still visit often, just more as adults because we can choose it, she said. The consistency is what brings them back. It's the same burger every time we come, Zane Digby added. Cox said he does make a recommendation for a new customer. The chili cheeseburger is our most popular, but there's nothing bad up there on the menu. The restaurant is located at 520 North Grant Avenue and is open for business 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. Gatlin to offer writing tips. Country superstar returns to pass a word of wisdom. Aside from singing with his brothers, one of Larry Gatlin's favorite things to do is pass on his knowledge to aspiring writers. He'll be doing just that as part of the Music Master Series at Odessa College April 19th. OC will also host him for a concert at the Ector County Theater the same day at 6:30 p.m. In a telephone interview, the Grammy Award-winning Gatlin said he has conducted writing workshops all over the world. The gist of mine is songwriting, but writing is writing. Here's what I tell people. All the words that you need for those songs, all the words you need for those essays, all the words you need for the novels, they're all in the dictionary. You just have to figure out what order they come in and do it in such a way that John and Mary will buy a CD or download something, or some newspaper will hire you to put it there, Gatlin says. Crediting his teachers in Ector County ISD, Gatlin said he is very well read. He added that he loves words. The old saying is, teaching is a didactic and learning is experimental. I could stand up there and teach West Texas Rearendolph for 2 hours. Doesn't mean they're learning anything. So what I try to do? No. One is I try to encourage them, Gatlin says. It's not my mission. It's not my job. It's not my intention to go in there and try to teach them to write like I do. What I'm going to do is give them 5 or 6 little things, but I think they're important, and I've learned along the way. One of my favorite authors, William Faulkner, he said, read, read, read. Read everything. Read trash so you'll know what it sounds like. You'll know what it looks like on the pages. Work like you would work if you were working as an apprentice carpenter, watching the master build a cabinet or a house, he added. Gatlin is a Nashville Songwriter Hall of Fame member and penned each is scored by the Gatlin brothers. The trio's chart-topping single, Houston, means I'm one day closer to you, is ranked among Billboard's 100 greatest country songs of all time. Larry, Steve, and Rudy have been Grand Ole Opry members for 45 years. Larry also hosts the Opry Country Classic Series at Nashville Historic Ryman Auditorium. Despite years of hectic scheduling, Gatlin continues to make time for giving back. He's a champion of cause related to veterans and children in need, press information said, an actor and producer. Gatlin has started in Broadway in The Will Rogers Follies and Civil War. He also is a longtime Fox News commentator and an avid golfer. He joked that he still performs because he likes having three meals a day and sleeps indoors. There's not as much work as there used to be, but with the brothers, we do about 50 days a year. We do the Grand Ole Opry. I host Opry Country Classics, Gatlin says. He also does solo gigs, and he still writes. I've learned that I am my own hardest critic. Anybody, anywhere can write a song. Not just anybody can craft one. Thank God I have some mighty tall shoulders and Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, Mickey Newberry, Roger Miller, Dottie West, people who taught me the craft. I learned some of it by digging it out. You've got to dig it out of the dirt. That's what golfers say, Gatlin said. Through the years, he's had four vocal cord surgeries. One was serious and the other were just a little tweaks. His favorite song is I've Done Enough Dying Today, but his wife Janice's favorite is All the Gold in California. Janice is also from Odessa and attended Ector County School. His favorite place to perform is the Grand Ole Opry. If I had one song to sing, I'd sing it at the Ryman. If I had two, I'd sing the second one at the Opry House. And the next one, I don't know, maybe Carnegie Hall. I've heard it's pretty good, Gatlin said. He added that he and his brothers had been very blessed, having sung at the Ryman 9 different times. Having performed since he was 3 or 4 years old, Gatlin said he never gets stage fright. He added that performing is not second nature to him and his brothers. It's first nature. I feel as natural up there as I do sitting in my easy chair, watching the Masters, Gatlin said. Joint redistricting task force to meet. A meeting of the Redistricting Joint Task Force Committee is scheduled for 6 p.m. Monday in Conference Room AB on the third floor of the Ector County ISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Items on the agenda include receiving from outside legal consultant and discussion initial assessment reports from the City of Odessa, Odessa College, Ector County Independent School District, and Ector County Hospital District, regarding whether redistricting is required for the entity's governing body, single-member districts consisting of 2020 census data. Discussion and consider adoption of redistricting criteria to apply to development of new districting plans. Discussion and consider adopting of redistricting guidelines regarding public participation in the redistricting process. Discuss and establish goals and procedures for internal operations and coordination, including possible selection of a committee chairperson and other assignments. Discuss and establish a tentative meeting schedule. A separate ECISD Board and Trustees meeting is set for 9 a.m. April 12th in Conference Room AB on the third floor of the Administration Building for team building as part of the Raise Your Hand Texas Trust Advocate Program. It also includes public comments. Odessan arrested following courthouse bomb scare. A 37-year-old man who was ordered to pay more than $168,000 in restitution on Wednesday has been arrested in connection with Thursday bomb scare at the Ector County Courthouse. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said David Paul Finnegan was taken into custody in the 3500 block of Garland on an outstanding felony warrant for tampering with a record in felony theft. Other charges pertaining to the device are pending, he said. Finnegan's arrest comes one day after authorities conducted a search on Finnegan's home. Griffiths declined to comment further. The investigation is still very active and no further information is available for release at this time, Griffiths said. According to the Ector County District Court's online records, Finnegan waived his rights to a jury trial in late January in connection with a handful of cases in which he is charged with possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamine, unauthorized use of a vehicle, tampering with government records, possession of stolen property, and 2 counts of injury to a child 14 years or younger. The exact terms of Finnegan's plea arrangement are unclear, but all of the cases appear to remain open. Court records indicate that the tampering case Finnegan was charged with placing his picture on another man's temporary driver's permit in order to claim and recover that man's vehicle. The unauthorized use of a motor vehicle charge pertained to the same alleged victim's Ford Mustang, and a Judge John Schroeder of the 358th District Court imposed a bill of cost and statement of fines and fees in the amount of $168,335 in that case that day before the device was found, court records show. The stolen property count pertained to a forklift, records show. A courthouse employee found that what appeared to be a pipe bomb outside the courthouse around 7:45 a.m. Thursday, and authorities set up barricades around the perimeter of the building for hours as the Odessa Police Department bomb squad, ATF agents, FBI agents, investigated. A high-pressure water device was used to perform the device around 9:30 a.m., and the courthouse was reopened later that day, although the sexual assault trial was delayed for a day. Griffiths said Saturday the device was deemed to be harmless, but did have some components that would be consistent with an actual explosion. It was the first time a device has ever been found at the courthouse, although other bomb threats had been called in, he said. Fittigan was also charged with criminal trespass on March 11th for a February incident involving a woman. In addition, he had a criminal mischief case filed late August, and it's on pretrial dockets for April 19th.
This is Jane, reading for the Odessa American from Saturday, April 9th. TxDOT traffic alerts for week of April 11th. The Texas Department of Transportation issued traffic alerts for week of April 11th. On Tuesday, April 12th, watch for slow-moving construction vehicles in the right-hand eastbound main lane of I-20 near Midkiff Overpass Project. Crews will be temporarily using a rolling lane closure in that lane as they make emergency repairs to concrete barrier. Otherwise, work on service roads continues the week of April 11th. In Winkler County, the week of April 11th, crews will be placing concrete on the SH-302 bridge deck and removing concrete barrier along the new frontage roads at the overpass project at State Highway 115. Detour layouts will vary during the week as these operations progress. Drive with caution and watch for flaggers and changing warning signs in the construction work zone. Slow down and obey signs and flaggers. In Midland County, the DPS has requested short intermittent closures starting at 11 a.m. on Monday on State Highway 349 at County Road 120 to investigate a crash. Plans are to use a drone, so closures will be short, but they may need to stop traffic several times. This was delayed from April the 1st. Also in Midland County, lane closures will channel Garfield down to one lane between Business Interstate 20 and Wall Street. Please find alternate routes if possible for the next week and several weeks. Slow down and obey signs and flaggers.
Obituaries. Patricia Lou Decker, Gardendale, 1932 to 2022. A celebration of life of Patricia Lou Decker will be held at 10 a.m. on April 14th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland, Texas. Kelly Wisdom will officiate the service. Patricia was born December 31st, 1932 to Warren and Ina Morgan in Mount Sterling, Illinois. She died at her home in Gardendale, Texas, on April 7th. Pat married the love of her life, Donald Leo Decker, on July 9th, 1952. Don served in the military from 1952 to 1962 and served in the Korean War. Pat was a proud military wife and enjoyed their travels together. Following Don's military service, they spent several years farming in Clayton, Illinois. Over the course of her life, Pat worked numerous professions. After moving to Texas in 1981, she worked the metal shear cutting machine at Clark Engineering and later worked in retail. She was most proud of being a homemaker and mother to her family. Don and Pat had several children, Deborah Alonzo and Donna Hoffman of Gardendale. David Lone Star Dave, Nancy, Decker of Stanton, Texas, Diane Volcom of Las Cruces, New Mexico, Darlene Han of Odessa, Mona Abels of Lakewood, Colorado, Michelle Abel of Odessa. In addition to her children, Pat left behind 26 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. Pat was preceded by her beloved husband, Donald Decker, her parents, Warren and Nina Morgan, her sister, Mona Lee Bly, and her husband, Lowell Bly, her sister-in-law, Laura Morgan, and her brother, Kenneth Morgan. Her brother, Warren Tanny Morgan of North Fork, California, and sister-in-law, Jacqueline Morgan of Carson City, Nevada, survives her. Pat will be remembered for her beautiful smile, her encouraging words, along with her strength and determination. She had a strong faith and could be counted on to pray for others. She will be missed tremendously. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations to be made to the West Texas Food Bank in her memory. Arrangements are under direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made, npwelch.com. Paula Holloway, Austin, Texas. Paula Holloway passed away April 2nd in Austin, Texas, due to complications from lung and heart issues. She was 81 years old. Paula and her beloved husband, Neil, were living in Brookdale, Westlake, independent living at the time of her death. Neil and Paula had moved to the Austin area several years after selling their farm in Alvord, Texas. Paula is survived by her husband, Neil Holloway, her 2 daughters, Lisa, Lori, and Wyatt, her son, Bryant Holloway, and her 4 grandchildren, Brooks, Finster, Robert, Wyatt Jr., Bucky Sledge, and Austin Holloway. Paula and Neil lived in Odessa, Texas most of their married life and loved the community there where they raised all 3 children. Paula was a devoted mother and grandmother. Though Paula had failing health for many years, few people know the extent to which she struggled. Her devotion and love for her family helped her push through the pain. Services for Paula will be held at Alvord Baptist Church in Alvord, Texas on April 16th at 3 p.m. Enrique Chavez Ricky Contreras, Odessa. Enrique Chavez Ricky Contreras, 54, of Odessa, died Monday, April 4th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Tuesday, April 12th at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial follows at Rose Hill Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Rosary is recited Monday evening at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Joel Rodriguez, Midland. Joel Rodriguez, 56, of Midland, Texas, died Thursday, April 7th, in Midland, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Wednesday, April 13th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Robert Bush is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Shauna Palmer Stringer, Odessa. Shauna Palmer Stringer, 51, of Odessa, died Friday, April 8th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. April 12th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 11th. Higher Ed Board starts new strategic plan. A new strategic plan to arm more Texans with a degree or certificate is aimed to cover a wider range of students. Commissioner of Higher Education Harrison Keller said that the plan is the product of more than a year's work by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board and Texas Higher Education Foundation, and it's called Building a Talent Strong Texas. Quote, "We engaged hundreds of higher education leaders, employers, policymakers, and other stakeholders across the state, so it's exciting to release the summary report," Keller said in an April 1st phone interview. Keller said there have been some updates to the board, and then in January the board adopted the targets for the plan. Quote, "We took the decision to the board and folded them into the summary report that was just a couple of weeks ago," Keller added. The goal of the 60 by 30 Texas plan was that by 2030, 60% of Texans age 25 to 34 would have some kind of degree or certificate. Quote, so we built on that goal and raised the bar. We have a goal for educational attainment still for 60% of our younger working population to have a degree, certificate, or other higher education credential by 2030. We also added a new target that older working Texans aged 35 to 64 should have a degree, certificate, or other credential of value by 2030. Quote, I want to underline when I say other credential of value because that could include short-term credentials, it could include industry-recognized credentials, it could even include skilled apprenticeships, but the important caveat there is we put a marker down that the credentials that we count toward our higher education goals ought to be credentials that translate into real value for students and their families. We're the first state to say our goal for production of higher education credentials should be considered on the earnings that are associated with those credentials. Are you better off for earning that kind of credential? We don't just want to produce more credentials. We want to produce credentials that are of value to individuals, their families, and to employers in our Texas economy, Keller said. During the pandemic, they saw the changes that were already happening in the economy were dramatically accelerated, for example, in how people use technology. Quote, all of a sudden, we had hundreds of thousands of Texans who needed additional training. They needed to reskill or upskill. They needed additional skills. They needed to upskill sometimes just to get another job in the same industry they'd been working in, so the needs of employers had been changing faster than anyone anticipated, so that means that we're going to have to expand our focus and be more intentional about serving adult working Texans who will be older than 34 years old by 2030. That's an important change from the original Texas 60 by 30 plan, Keller said. He added that they also put an important marker down on student debt, saying the goal added clarity. Quote, our updated goal is that by 2030, 95% of our Texas students should be able to complete their undergraduate credentials either with no debt at all or debt that would be manageable for the kind of credential they earn. Could you reasonably pay that debt back over 10 years, given how much a typical credential holder would earn over that same period, Keller said. Quote, the idea is to provide a little more guidance to students, their families, their advisors, about how much debt is too much debt. We're going to push institutions to monitor more closely how much debt students are taking out, he added. Keller noted that more than half of Texas students graduate from college debt-free, and many of them work their way through school. There are a variety of credentials that would pay off relatively fast, from commercial truck driving to a certification in software experience design. Quote, there were short-term programs in data analytics and project management, so there are things from more technical to more advanced short-term programs that can translate into tremendous value that are directly aligned with what employers need right now, Keller said.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. The heart doesn't explode, but it can rupture. Dear Dr. Roach, what causes heart explosion? I heard that it can relate to a heart attack. I knew of two people who had it. How often does it happen? Answer. The heart doesn't actually explode. So I suspect you are talking about rupture of the wall of the left ventricle, which fortunately is a rare complication of a large heart attack. Back when I was in medical school, one of my professors noted that people seldom survive it. The mortality rate at that time was about 95%. The most recent study showed 75% of people with a wall rupture will die. Immediate surgery is the only hope, and even that has a high risk. A heart attack is death of heart muscle cells, and after a heart attack, there is a period where the body absorbs the dead muscle cells and makes a scar. But before the scar is fully formed, almost always within 2 weeks of the heart attack, the dead muscle is weak and can potentially rupture under the ceaseless work and constant pressure of the heart. In the era where most heart attacks are treated by getting blood flow back to the damaged area, the incidence of wall rupture is very small, about 0.01%.
Support exists for those impacted by sex addiction. Dear Abby, I'm writing regarding Brokenhearted in Oregon, whose partner is pursuing recovery from porn addiction, and Fading in Washington, whose husband is likely watching porn, is displaying narcissistic tendencies and belittling his wife's appearance and age. Please suggest these women seek appropriate support to deal with it. If either of the men were abusing drugs or alcohol or gambling excessively, you would have told the spouse to seek out a 12-step group like Al-Anon. Well, there are support groups for sex and porn addicts, as well as their partners. My ex-husband kept his sex and porn addiction from me during our marriage, but after one affair that I knew of, and twice discovering his constant use of the internet to view porn and enter chat rooms, I realized the man I thought I knew had a secret life that did not include intimacy with me. It left me shattered, disillusioned, and horrified. There's a great shame associated with this disease. I was fortunate to find 2 12-step programs for codependents of sex addicts, S-Anon and COSA, a group in which I continue to engage, although my marriage is over. There is help out there for partners like me. I have learned a great deal about the conditions that set the stage for future addiction, and also my own codependency that led me into that relationship and caused me to turn a blind eye to what was happening. The abuse of pornography is a crisis in our society. Please encourage your readers to seek information about porn and sex addiction by Googling, "Is my partner a sex addict?" and learning more about COSA and S-Anon, as well as consult a therapist who recognizes and understands this problem. Signed, Recovering in Connecticut. Dear Recovering, thank you for writing. I'm pleased the support groups you cited helped readers. COSA is a 12-step program for people whose lives have been affected by compulsive sexual behavior. S-Anon helps individuals connect with others who have also experienced the effects of someone's sex addiction and found a way forward. If you find yourself in the kind of situation Recovering has described, I urge you to seek support. Dear Abby, I've been with a divorced man for almost 2 years now. He's told me several times he will always be there for his ex-wife, regardless of what she may need. He often reminisces about his life and is constantly telling me about places he's been and things he's done, which include her. I've talked to him about how it makes me feel, and his answer is, "That's life." He says he is who he is and will never change. He swears he is no longer in love with his ex-wife. I wish I could believe it. What should I do? Signed, Other Woman in Oregon. Dear Other Woman, understand that you are involved with a man who loves reliving his past, regardless of how it affects you. What a bore he must be. Since you asked, I'm suggesting you find someone who prefers looking forward rather than looking backward, and who is more stimulating company. This person is too dismissive of your feelings for my taste.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.